Hey, check it out. You're smoking with your boy Joe Thunder. This podcast brought to you by Be Good Dispensary, our official sponsor. Bringing the latest and greatest in hip hop and the arts and cannabis culture. With co-host Elvis Freshly and DJ Sin. Hey, what's going on? It's your boy Joe Thunder back once again with another episode of the Smoking Joe Thunder podcast. I got my co-host Elvis Freshly in the building. What's going on, G?
What a dude, player.
Chilling. Can I get a one-home?
One-home.
Hell yeah. Hey, shout out to Be Good Dispensary, our official sponsor over here on 11 West Hamden. They got all the specials running, so make sure to hit them up and check out, you know, all that llama, that Zopax.
You already know. Got that fire.
Where's up north?
114th and Cherokee. It's right across the highway from Boondocks.
And shout out real quick, DJ Sin. She tried her best to make it here because we got a special podcast for you, something that's going to be crazy.
So. She's in New York holding it down.
She missed her plane this morning.
Yeah.
Damn, I'm sorry, girl. Damn. You know what I mean? But like I said, we got another special, you know, episode for you, man. We got, I don't even know where to start with this one because we got a, how do I say it, rapper. We got an actor, shot caller, baller, you know what I mean? OG in the building. We got Mr. Criminal and Big Villain.
That's right, Big Villain.
Yeah, what's cracking? House.
Nah, shit, how y'all doing, man?
Chilling, smoking. What's popping?
Hell yeah, good weed, right?
Man, be good. This is real good weed. I'm enjoying it. What's this, the llama?
Llama brand cannabis.
They ain't playing.
Yeah.
Got the fire.
Some grape. What was the other one? Grape Stomper.
Yeah.
Got a little bit of everything. Bananas and blow, some Gorilla Glue.
Some good stuff today.
Yeah, this is a good way to come off the plane right away. I'll tell you that right now.
For real, there you go, brother.
Yeah, thanks for coming through, man. We really appreciate it.
Definitely really appreciate y'all, man. Y'all got a show tonight, right?
Yes, sir. The Roxy. Tonight, pull up. We're about to do it.
Hey, when's the last time you've been in Denver, man? How long has it been?
Man, I lose track. Honestly, we do so many shows and so much in between. I lose track, but I think it's been about a good year, at least a year.
All right. You excited, man?
Man, I'm excited as hell, man. I ain't been doing no shows in a minute. I've been kind of exclusive, working on other businesses, building my studio and stuff.
We see that.
Yeah, I had to come touch Denver back with that OG love because it's always been a city that shows love and represents, you know?
Hell yeah. We see you're doing a lot of shit, bro. You're doing movies. You're making your own movies.
Yes, sir.
You know what I mean? On Netflix.
Yes, sir. Entrepreneur.
Dropping music.
Yeah, definitely. Entrepreneur. Tapping into.
Man. It's a beautiful thing. Just trying to stay in front of and behind the lens and create, and the ultimate thing is just to create, man. I love to create.
Hell yeah.
And leave some shit behind so the people could enjoy it, you know?
Hell yeah, because we ain't going to be here forever, and like you said, you might as well leave some dope-ass shit so they can have that shit, right?
Yes, sir.
Because nowadays, these kids are all about the internet.
Straight
up. You
know
what I'm saying? Man. YouTube and all that shit.
Yeah, it's changing fast, too. There's a lot of stuff going on.
Hell yeah, for sure.
Hey, well, check it out, man. This is your first time here. Why don't you kind of give them a little, you know, brief description of who you are, where you grew up, kind of where you're from?
Yeah, it's your homeboy, Mr. Criminal. I mean, shit. Latin rap kingpin, the Latin lyrical assassin, OG high power member, helped build that movement since back in the days. Shit, I was just in the airport getting our rental car in earlier, and it was like, record label, and he remembered, you know, since back in the days, high power, making history, Black and Brown connections from the old school, producing Busy Bones, Little Flips, Compton's Most Wanted, to our in-house high power shit, to becoming, you know, my own brand worldwide. Now we own our record label, Crime Family Entertainment, and we just bossing up doing another next level shit, investments, studios, all kinds of different shit.
Tell me where you from and where you grew up, man.
Man, I grew up, I'm a Southern California baby, so born in Whittier, grew up all around from East Los, La Puente, Walnut, Pomona, Riverside.
I've
been all over the map, yeah, but you know, my home spot, home base, I should say, is Silver Lake, you know. A lot of my homeboys are from there. I was back and forth, being on the run, tapping in with my homeboys no matter where I'll go, no matter what part of the map.
Right.
That was like home, you know what I'm saying? Like the homies would always embrace
me right
there.
That's where
you touch down. That's where we go party, cruise, go, you know, chill with the different peoples from all different LA, you know, the female scene, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a beautiful thing. No matter where I would go, no matter what city I'll go to, have strangers everywhere else, my homeboys would always embrace me, get locked up, go away for a year, come back out, boom, just pull up right
still
back
there
like nothing ever changed, you know?
Hell yeah. And then we got somebody else with you, man. We got Big Villain, right?
That's right, Big Villain.
What's going on?
Crime Family, Lakeside OG Silver Lake representative, you know?
Silver Lake.
He's out here on this Crime Family movement. Running around the world with my boy, Mr. Criminal, you know, it's been a blessing, man. Like, literally, bro, around the world.
I see the gram, bro. I see y'all everywhere, and that's dope that y'all get to do that shit and experience that shit. You know what I mean? Because not many motherfuckers that are our color, you know, that are brown like us get to do that shit.
Yeah.
keep it real. I've been a million places, but I the only place I've been outside the United States is Mexico. I ain't been, you know, touched down anywhere, and that's dope that y'all get to see that and, you know, expose, you know, your family to all that shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, for sure. It's been a real blessing. It's been a roller coaster, man.
Right.
I've seen it from the game, you know, from the beginning of the
from
game.
All
from
angles.
Early 2000s, you know, 1999 when homie was putting his stuff together to where he's at now, you know. Oh, it's yeah. Where we're at, really, you know. Because
from the very beginning.
Yeah, you know, Crime Family is really that. It's a select few, you know, mm-hmm. that are really embraced and are part of this movement. And we consider it a we, you know. Hell if he's yeah. winning, we win, and vice versa.
Yeah. Well, that's how it is. You got to take care of your people, right?
Yeah. I think that was a really important thing why we highlighted the family part of it. My homeboy Rascal, rest in peace, helped name it.
Yeah, rest in peace, G-Raz.
My homeboy Diablo that's fighting you know, his case, whatever he's dealing with right now. They were like my original members, part of this label, as well as my homeboys, like you mentioned. And when I was naming it, it was like everybody was like, they love the family vibe because of what we represent, what we stand for.
Right.
Anybody knows me from back in the days, like when you go on the road with me, any of my homeboys, I used to take my homeboys from my neighborhood. They'll get fresh out on parole.
Right.
They ain't got no money in their pocket, and they come with me out of state. I take care of them the whole nine. So never been greedy. Always wanted to try to put on for my people because, you know, the people that take care of you, it goes back and forth. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's dope. Hey, talk about like growing up in Southern California a little bit.
Yeah.
Because it sounded like, man, you weren't afraid of shit.
You know, I could definitely say when it came to my crowd of any people that could vouch for that they knew me since I was probably 10 all the way up to 18 and above, I was always the first to raise my hand. I was always the first to, probably the first one to get expelled from school, probably the first one to go to juvenile hall at 11 right. years old, like first one to go to camp, first one to all that shit, which is braggable and cool then, but you grow up and realize you just wasted a lot of time.
Right.
But
that's true.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's I guess times changing, and back then, I wouldn't say it wasn't that you weren't scared of shit. It was just that the thrill of it was real, you know right. what I'm saying? It was just such so fun to be out there and do shit. Like
right. Wilding out.
Yeah, just wilding out, man. You weren't really thinking of consequences. You weren't really giving a fuck. It wasn't even about that, you know what I'm saying? It was just yeah. having fun and shit, you know?
Yeah, even wilding out. You didn't know you were wilding out. Mm-hmm. That's just because you did it every
doing.
Day.
Yeah, that's what you
it
were
It was
doing.
Just a different thing you was doing. Yeah, whether straight you was up. Going to hit a lick or you were going to go run around with these girls. Or you were right, gonna right. do it. It was just always something.
And then back then, the consequences weren't that crazy either. I mean, you know what I mean?
I mean, they were crazy, though. They were crazy. You know, there was a lot of people that caught, back in our days, that caught what they called juvenile life back in the days.
What's
that? That means basically it's a charge that would get you life if you were an adult. Yeah. But since you're a minor, they're going to keep you until you're 25 years old.
Damn.
So you would basically, you would do your whole thing. If you were lucky, you could stay that whole time in the California Youth Authority. But once you hit 18, and if you messed up in the youth authority, that's when you would go to big boy prison.
Right.
One of our homeboys from our neighborhood were one of the first people in California, literally. Like, I think it was the second or third case that got tried as an adult in California from our neighborhood. One of my homeboys, I'm not going to mention his name and shit, but yeah, he was one of the first people ever that got tried and convicted as an adult, as a juvenile.
Damn. Talking about juvie, man, you said the first day you were in juvie, you had to whoop somebody's ass. It's like a little mini riot with them.
It was a dude named Harris. A dude named Harris. I'll never forget. A big, tall dude. He was way like two heads taller than me. And what happened was we had my homeboy, rest in peace. We had this big ass rumble right there off of Banbury and Riverside when I had first moved out there. It was like, you know, different groups were like congregating and shit was segregated and shit whatnot from different areas and, you know, same little street shit. And we ended up getting into some little rumble, and like a week later, I saw this dude, and when they had walked me in the juvenile hall, like, to program me, like, okay, they're like, Harris, go ahead and show Garcia what's going on, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
The whole time, he's just walking with me like, bitch-ass motherfucker, I'm gonna take flight as soon as we hit this corner, all that type of shit, you know?
Right.
So I couldn't take that shit so far, so when we he kept on wolfing, and when we got to showers, it got to a point where he was supposed to give me some soap.
Uh-huh.
He was like, keep walking, and I just took flight and shit, little kid shit, you know?
Let him have
it,
right?
Yeah, that shit was real. Yeah, it wasn't nothing. They used to call me Scrappy before they called me Criminal because I loved to fight. As a child, I loved to fight. I was just hyperactive, and I loved to fucking get them up.
So back then, was it more about the heads and guns?
I would say...
Half and half?
Probably, yeah.
Because you always have the fools that want to show out.
It's always the homies that got the guns on them and always strapped up. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I was always heated back, too, you know? I was like 12, 13 years old, always with like a 22 in my fucking feelers. That was real shit. My homeboy Clumsy We always used to share the 25. He'd keep it at his house a day. I keep it at my house. Same shit, my homeboy Shy, we used to have a 32 Smith & Wesson. It was like, if it wasn't his van, if it wasn't his Cutlass, it was at my crib. I was taking it and go see keep my people traveling. So it's just like, it was there, but obviously, you're not going to go to that. That's like, if worse comes to worse, I got heart, so I'm not going to just jump to my gun, you know? No matter what, I'm going to try to fight and talk my situation out of it.
For real, that's the last resort.
Yes, as definitely it should that be. Resort. Some people, it's like, it's that's true first, and I think a lot of people brag on that, but I think it's that shit's fear, to be honest with you. Motherfuckers are scared to get their ass whooped. You know?
Yeah, that's not cool at all. Mm-mm. Like you, like I said, during your youth, man, you weren't afraid to do anything. You were always trying to prove yourself and just show that you were like the top dog out of the youngsters, right?
Yeah, I would say it wasn't even that wasn't my mentality. It just I was kind of the rep that I got. Like I kicked it with a lot of older dudes. So anybody that was on my level of like age wise. Like, homies would pull up 21 years old, 20, like, we're going to go fuck with these bitches in a badass Regal on some Daytons. And, like, they'd be like, nah, only criminals jumping in. I don't roll with kids. It was like, they always treated me like I was an adult or something.
You hung out with the older cats.
I think I carried myself a little different. I was taller. I already had, like, facial hair young. So I think I just, even girls that ask, like, oh, you're so fine. How old are you? I'd be like, I'm 18. They'd buy it. I was, like, 14 years old.
Right.
So, yeah, that shit's... I don't think the mentality was like, oh, I got to be the hardest. I just think that we're just having fun.
You know? Right. I got you. And then you had a kid and shit kind of changed, right?
Everything changed. The pressure, that's when life turned up. Look, I was raised without a dad. And seeing the struggles that my mom went through in our house firsthand, seeing the struggles that some of my peers went through without having fathers in their lives, and then seeing the homies that had fathers and how they wouldn't go to jail and how they would be going to football practice and get their first car at 16. Mm-hmm. And that's the shit I would look up to. Like, damn, I wish I had that low-key, you know?
Right.
So it was always a conscious thing. And even as a child, I remember my mom looking back and telling me, like, I'm proud of you for taking responsibility at 15, because you used to tell me as a little kid, 9, 10 years old, if you had a kid, you would never leave your son or daughter and you would always take care of them. And I did that. I seen it through no matter what.
Hell yeah, that's dope as fuck, man, because a lot of our youth grow up without fathers, you know what I mean?
Yeah, man, same.
And that happened to you, and you said, I'm not going to let that happen to my kid.
Under no circumstances.
Yeah. You said even the homies would trip on you at first.
Yeah, I used to get that, like, motherfuckers pulling up, Tech 9 in the ride, like, hey, we're going to go do this, whatever. And sometimes I have to separate myself, like, look, check it out, homie, like, I just got out from doing this. My son just, like, my son needs me right now, whatever. Even if I didn't have to explain myself, I just wouldn't do it.
Right. You know what I'm
And if motherfuckers consider it ranking, whatever they consider, I didn't care, because what I did up to that point, I knew what I was capable of doing and what I was willing to do under any circumstances.
You know? You've already done your shit, you know what I mean? You're just, everything you're doing is all extra.
And now the chips are bigger, and even as a 15-year-old, I think I understood that life was serious and that I had a life, another human being, and a soul depending on me, you know what I'm saying? And if I fucked up and kept going down the path I was going, he was going to end up like me, you know?
Hell yeah. And then you started getting into rapping at that time, right?
I had a love for music since I was a little boy. I've been into music more heavily than anybody I knew since I was a kid. So
making tapes and shit.
Making tapes, like recording other artists, showing people like music. Like I was like a promoter since a kid and just loving music, you know? I started rapping in juvenile hall, being in isolation. When you put a fucking ADHD 12-year-old, 11-year-old kid in a cell for 24 hours a day, the only way you can get out is just to eat and shower, a motherfucker's gonna think of creative ways. I'm not an artist. You guys are blessed with your art. You guys could draw. Even if I could draw, we didn't have nothing but our fingernails to tag on that shit anyways. But you come with creative, what could you do? You know what I'm saying? So I love music, so what I would do to kill time is I'd be like, all right, Too Short. And then I would like think of an album, and I'd be like, I have a good memory. And I start rapping the whole album like it was playing in my head, like the intro all the way to the end.
Uh-huh.
And then the juvenile hall staff walked by like, shut the fuck up, Garcia. Quit all that rapping, you know? And then I just kept doing it until I started learning my own lyrics and shit.
Right. You started freestyling a little bit too, right?
Yeah, we used to have some shit called R&R. And then there'd be homies that would get out of our cells for a certain time, or like if they would let us off lockdown or whatever, if I get out of isolation. And then like after doing your workouts and shit, maybe like after dinner, like 20, 30 minutes, I'd let everybody like for once not be all benched up or like all like formal, but just sit on the grass and chill, like be like normal kids once in a great while. And then, like, let you talk, because you're not supposed to talk as juveniles, you know? Like, you can't even, like, say shit to each other. And, you know, kids will start rapping and shit. And I took a liking to that. I was like, fuck it. I even started capping at first. I'll be, like, rapping some underground Too Short shit and be like, yeah, I made this up right here.
That's tight.
Oh, yeah.
And then talk about like the story how like you got a Mr. Capone CD and it had a number on there, the little hotline.
Damn, you know the real shit. So my homeboy Shy Boy from my neighborhood, that's crazy. My homeboy Shy Boy from my neighborhood, he was connected with these cats, you know, cruising the boulevards, like going out in Whittier, partying, just being LA cats, you know, we all function and shit. And I think I had met a couple of the homies before I had got busted that time. And the homie was always telling me, like, yeah, dog, when you get out, I'm going to introduce you. You used to always write me no matter what. And sometimes I get pissed because the staff will pull me out and be like, look, your homeboy wrote you. And the letter would be all blasted up. West Side, Silver Lake, Criminal, Shy Boy, like, just blasting. I could tell it's my homeboy, but I would never be able to read the contents, you know? And I could never write him back and tell him stop doing that shit. They wouldn't allow me to communicate. But he would always, like, the ones that would come through, I remember him kept on saying, like, this dude's rapping out here. You got to meet him. You got to meet him. So then when I got out, it was probably like 2 weeks into, me being out. And the homeboy had picked me up and we went somewhere. And he let me use a CD. And then it was on the back of that CD was the homie's number. And I was like, well, my homeboy knows this fool. If I call him, bang on his line and let him like bust a little quick little flow and say where I'm from, he's going to know exactly. He's going to run into me eventually. So that's exactly what I did. I was like, what's up? This is Mr. Criminal from Westside Silver Lake. Want to bust some shit for you. Boom, I went off. The minute I met him, I'll never forget the minute I met him, he goes, hey. And there was like bitches all around, everything, like jocking. He's like, hold on. Like people getting his attention. Dude, like, you're the one that left that voicemail, huh? You're the one that left that voicemail. Like, it was like, no matter what, he had to like communicate with me. I had to get in the limo. He was like, you rolling with us to Whittier Boulevard after? Fuck this. We're going to the studio. Like, he was really like really that's persistent right. about fucking with me.
That's dope. From and you almost style. Didn't make it there.
Nah, I almost didn't make it there. Damn you.
Nardwar.
Some Nardwar shit. That going back to, you know, having different guns and shit, I used to have, like, I was known for having, like, some really high-powered weapons young because I would rob houses and shit.
Right.
And me and my homeboy, rest in peace, we would rob pads and come up on Tech 9s, Mac 11s, all kinds of shit. And this time I had a Tech 9. I remember it was a Tech 9 with 32 extended clip, two of them. And I was going to hop in because that was normal for us. Fools out there used to trip on us. And my homeboy wouldn't let me get in the car with him that day. And that was, like, normal. Like, I remember I was talking shit. What the fuck you mean, dog? You tripping? Like, it's a fucking being a bitch, dog. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, you're not getting in the car with my shit, with that shit, dog. We went to this car show. It's hot as fuck. Man, as soon as we got out that freeway, I remember, like, we didn't even make it fully off the exit. That fucking cop pulled us out, searched. Ooh, ooh. Man, they damn near put their finger in our booty holes, you know? They checked every fucking crevice of that car, and I would have never made it. I would have been gone, for sure.
And you would have never met Mr. Capone for the first time.
And I wouldn't have been there for my son, either. Yeah.
Hey, did y'all hit the studio that night or the next day?
My homeboy didn't let me. My homeboy said, we're going to play it. You're not going to play like you're some desperate dude, all desperate to go chill with him. He's like, we're going to dip out. We're going to make your shit valuable. We're gonna let them work for it. I'll never forget that. And I was just desperate. I was like, I'm trying to go to the fucking studio. He's like, Trust me, homie. My homeboy had game, you know? That's one thing all my own OGs had, my older homies, they had a lot of game and shit.
And it seems like that comes from, like I said, you always hung out with older cats because of your brother and sister. They're always kind of partying. You were there with them.
Yep.
So just automatically you get to meet the older people and just rolling with different circles, right?
Yeah, they were from a different generation. So my brother and sister used to party a lot when we lived in La Puente. And they used to always have the fucking helicopters and fucking gang units there and fights and shootouts and all that shit. But by the time they turned 18 and they were out of the house, I was like, it was a whole different crowd. We had moved different cities, so I had a whole different crew of people. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Hey, talk about, like, the first single that you made was Mr. Capone that kind of blew you up.
My first single that actually charted.
Or the first album.
My first album was, I signed a High Power, and it was called Criminal Mentality. And then I didn't have a single that actually came out and did something. Like, I had a couple singles that were on the radio and did pretty well, BDS and charted. But my one that really, really did well around the nation was my first song with Nate Dogg and Capone and Mami Mira.
I definitely want to talk about that because, I mean, if I was ever a rapper, I would definitely have fucking Nate Dogg on at least a song if I could get him on too. And like, were the brothers and Mexicans cool back then? Because how did all that happen? I mean, gang shit's going on.
You know what? I'm gonna say it like this. I'm a gangster, right? Mm-hmm. I'm a man first. But I'm a G. Like, if you claim you're a G, what's a G? You're going to do whatever the fuck you want, right?
Right.
You don't play by the rules, right?
Right.
Obviously, you follow certain suits and shit, right? But as a G, like, I have the mentality, like, I know that I'm going to not do nothing wrong, so can't nobody tell me I can't do shit. that was never an issue for me ever. Right. Like never, like that black and brown shit, never, ever, ever. Like if my neighborhood, cool, like cool. I tell people, where I'm from, anywhere I grew up, I didn't even see that. Like there was never even beefs like that. Like right. We didn't, anywhere I grew up and ran into to anybody of the other color skin, it was cool. It was like right. We're smoking, we're chilling, like selling weed, like, oh, that's the essay, oh, that's the homies, the Crip homies, right. Or whatever, you know, which was very seldom. It was only like one, two cities in my life I ever moved into that there was groups of Crips and shit. But yeah, that was never a problem for me.
How did that song happen?
That song happened because I was starting to kick up so much dust on my label. I had sold 150,000 pre-orders of my second album, Organized Crime. And we were pretty much like making history with Chicano rap. It was outselling right. Even traditional West Coast rap in those times. And my label owner, Capone, had said, you know, this is like, you're on fire right now. We got to push your shit next level to the radio. You're making basically...
That's next level shit.
Yeah, you're making a lot of money for the label. Your sound's taking off. And I'll never forget, he's like, I was in my living room and he called and he's like, you ready for a Nate Dogg single? And I was like, what you mean? He's like, I'm about to put Nate Dogg on your next album. I was like, damn, that's huge. I'll never forget. I couldn't stop smiling that day.
I bet.
And he's like, I'm going to book the studio time with Fingers. I'm going to pay the couple G's for this track that fool's on fire with all his radio songs. I'm going to get it, Nate Dogg. We'll set it up. You start coming up with an idea of what you want to do with him.
Do you know if he taxed you? I don't think he probably would have. I think it was kind of on
the side. Label paid for it, but I could definitely say this right now, and I know exactly what was paid. I'm not going to say the number, but Nate Dogg is the king of hooks, and what we paid was like the homie just showing love, you know what I'm saying?
The homie hookup, yeah. Like we were talking about earlier.
Just out of respect type shit, yeah. You know what I'm saying? I don't even think it was like that, you know what I'm saying?
I'm sure you were psyched as fuck when that shit happened.
Man, I was pumped. I went, and I remember that same night on Everything I Love, I was like super pumped up. I fucking went to take a shower, and I came up with that hook in the shower. And then I wrote it down as soon as I got out because I was like humming it. And then I was like, man, I didn't know if it was going to go. I went to the studio, gave it to Fingers, and Fingers like immediately started putting on his metronome, started making a little kick and clap. He's like, keep singing that again. And then he came with that first instrument, the lead that's dun, 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 dun. Yeah. The whole beat came from that. And then I was really nervous to have singing in front of Nate. So I was like, this is a king of hooks. He's gonna look at me like, the fuck did you write, fool, you know? And I never forget, I was like literally almost shaking singing to him. And he looked down at me, he's like, you wrote that? Like he didn't believe it. And I was like, yeah. He goes, that shit hard as fuck. He goes, let me see that so I could rewrite it my way. When he said that, I thought he was gonna like completely change it, which I was cool with. Like I'm not a singer and shit, you know? He just rewrote it so he could understand it because my writing's fucked up.
Right.
And he went in there and sung it exactly how I did.
Yeah. That's dope, man.
Yeah. I never heard that story. Word.
That's dope. That's really dope.
Everybody in the studio, I'll never forget. It was my favorite studio session ever. Everybody was pulling up. Everybody, Capone, Silent, my old record labels, Flossy, Fingers. Everybody kept smiling, looking at me. It was like, you got a hit.
In the house, bro.
They kept telling me, you got a hit. You're about to make history. This is on.
What's crazy is that beat sounds like a nigga. He goes perfect West Coast the whole nine, you know?
Yeah, it was right up the alley. It was like, Fingers. It's what we're living and breathing and feeling at that time. You know what I'm saying?
Hell yeah. Not only that, but you have another big track too, man. You got a track with Wiz. That's pretty big too.
Yeah, that was dope.
Talk about that.
So coming into the new school, being from the 90s and shit, I don't like a lot of these new artists. I'm just keeping it real. Anybody that I say now, I'm starting to grow more on it. But at that time, it was more like, fuck that. I'm from the 90s era. Yeah, like these new fools are swag type shit. So there's only certain fools I fucked with. I liked a lot of Wiz Khalifa. I liked Nipsey. And I like ASAP. Those were like the artist, like kind of like a Draco, like I found him before anybody knew him. Like I fuck with Draco in L.A. before anybody fucked with him. Like literally, like nobody even knew who he was, you know? So like I have a thing, like even G Perico, I was like in his first videos before anybody even knew who he was. So I have a thing where I don't know if it's organic. I mean, I know it's organic because I'm not looking for it. Somehow I connect with these cats and I meet people and I fuck with people before they're on, you know what I'm saying? Well, I didn't have a chance to meet Nipsey until, you know, a little bit before he passed, like a couple years before. But I fuck with Nipsey since his first fucking tape. Yeah. Like true support. Wiz Khalifa, same shit. Orange Juice and Kush or whatever that shit was called, Kush and Orange Juice. I was bumping that shit all throughout when it first came out, my first Escalade, like crazy. Very influential music. I was like, one day I want to get my shit to sound like this. Like, we were like traditional West Coast OG sound, but I felt like they were creating a new sound for themselves. Yeah. And I wasn't at that level musically to create our own sound, you know what I'm saying? So to make a long story short, I always wanted to work with them. Fast forward a few years later, I end up, you know, leveling up in my career, coming out of movies and shit, doing different things. And I start having a lot of people in my ear like, you need to make a next move with your music. You need to start really like pushing something that matches the level of what you're doing music or movie wise, you know? So I had some people that really believe in me, a dude named Jay Hanlon from Rose Lane Records. And he's a sick ass producer. He's done shit with Chaka Khan all the way down to Gucci Man, Waka Flockas. I mean, the dude's career is like very, very leveled, you know? And he's like, you know, I really believe in you, and I think that you could do some shit for your people, your culture. You've already done it, but I really think that more people need to hear you, you know? And he's like, Perps from 808 Mafia, which is like the biggest hip-hop production group at that in that moment, he had taught him how to do everything. He taught him Fruity Loops, got him his first laptop, everything. He's like, that's Wiz's number one producer. I think they got like five platinum records together alone. Damn. So he's like, I'm gonna reach out and tell him we want to do this record. And literally, like, after like 2-3 calls back and forth, whatever, a little bit of negotiation, we cut the record. It was just like, damn, that, you know. Wiz was really feeling it. And the one thing about Wiz is like, it's not about money to him, you know what I'm saying? Like, at that time, like, I don't think anybody has a bigger song other than maybe Gundam Star or something, but that song with Charlie Puth, that big ass fucking song for the Fast and Furious soundtrack, that shit got like the biggest views ever. So he knows his worth, his value. He doesn't fuck with nobody. Underground cats, even bigger cats, whatever. So to have him hear my shit and feel it and jump on it and show basically some homie love was a motherfucking honor to me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's dope.
And then we're talking about weed shit. What else? Right. How else could you get better than that?
Right.
Go
wrong. Hell yeah. Talking about big numbers, you got a Netflix show. That's up there, right?
It's not a show, it's a movie I was on. Yes, sir. I was definitely a part of a movie with my homie David Ayer. Blessed me with a movie with a dope little role. We shot a lot more, but you know how movies go. We ended up shooting 12 days, 18 to 20 hour days. There's a couple more scenes. Even the scenes I was in were a lot more, but movies have so much that they have to cut that shit down. But I was in that movie Bright with Will Smith.
Will Smith.
It was a fucking life-changing movie. Yeah, it's just completely changed my life financially. To the level up in my music, to streams, to my movements.
Good boost, right?
It's literally just made, I was always doing my thing, hustling, getting it, and I wasn't doing bad before, but that definitely leveled it up.
How'd that happen?
So the director, he wrote Fast and Furious, the first movie. He directed and wrote Training Day, and he's got a big resume under his belt. He's a big fan of my music, and he was just reaching out, and he wanted me to fuck with him and do some shit, like on some organic shit. And he reached out. I didn't really believe it was him reaching out. After when I got back, I was like on set the next day, fitting. Like, and then he upgraded me on set, like right then and there. Like, he already had it planned. Like, I'm going to give you some lines. I don't have you written in this movie because you came in last minute. But I'm going to make you have lines. Like, you're going to say some shit. You're going to get your SAG, you know?
Hell yeah. That's dope, man. That shows that hard work pays off. You know
it does, man. I was a week before that chilling on the road. The week later, fucking being directed to talk shit to Will Smith and cuss these fools out and blast at them and shit. Like, shit's crazy, dog. You just never know where life goes.
How was it working with Will?
It was a fucking trip. I won't say it's a dream come true because I never dreamed it. It was just fucking...
He's a major star. Like, he's like Tom Cruise and like fucking...
Fucking,
you know,
Fresh Prince, yo.
Man. This life, dog, is even just for more than Will Smith's experience. Even just like today, I was trying to get into some shit that I really want to get into that's really hard, called NFTs, and I just made a conversation and linked with like some developers. That's like the hardest thing to do. I don't know, bro. I just feel like I'm on a path from God, you know what I'm saying? To be honest with you, and I'm just walking it, and keep your intentions pure and your heart right, not try to do nobody dirty, and try to help and better the situation for everybody around you. And God will open those doors for you.
For real, just got to keep positive and keep thinking, man.
Real shit.
And spread the wealth, too.
That's like what's worked for me. Yeah, I never thought about working with Will Smith. Never. It's fucking cool. Next thing you know, we're shadow boxing and fucking clowning each other and joking around on set, chilling. Like, literally, like, I'll go to the set and my chair's right there. Will Smith's right there. David is like fucking crazy shit.
That's dope. That's wild. Dope. Hey, what kind of words do you have for, like, the youth out there, man, about becoming a million-dollar SA?
I would say stay true to yourself, first and foremost. That goes from the youth all the way up, because, like, you know, kid, even big homies telling you to do shit that you know you shouldn't do. If you know you shouldn't do it and you know that's not right, fuck proving something to somebody else, man. Get your education. Get a fucking good at sport. Get good at learning a computer.
Right.
Learn fucking a video game. Get on Twitch, something, man. There's so many
you can master
positive
something.
Things that you could do in this life. Just stay true to yourself. If you stay true to yourself, you can't lose. Once you start trying to be influenced by someone else and trying to do something that other motherfuckers want you to do, that's when you start losing off top.
Hell yeah, bro. You got to respect that shit. You know what I'm saying? For real. That's real shit. Hey, we got Big Villain over here, man.
Let's go.
We were talking about some shit earlier, man. You want to elaborate about that earlier? About your homies?
I don't know. What are you talking about? We on this Be Good out here, man. You got to give me some. We were talking about the concert
that shut down L.A.
Big up the homies on the run out there in L.A., OTR crew, the homie from Dead City Punks, you know, big up Miker, Merch, all them cats out there, Tor, Kane, everybody out there, you know, they got a movement going on right now, man. They got a movement going on right now in the punk scene. They're able to write their own check at this point. Right. Wherever they want to take it, they can. And you know, the homie Criminal says organic. That was a straight organic move, you know?
Right.
Like, everything that they built, they did it themselves.
It's like some pull-up shit. They're literally, like, getting everything you can think of, just pulling up to a spot in L.A. and just throwing a party real quick.
But not like a regular-ass party, bro. These guys are on some other shit. On some completely other level shit, you know? It's there. Check it out on the YouTube. Yeah. Dead City Punks.
Were you in L.A. that day when it got shut
down? Nah, I wasn't. You know, I was out in the dirty desert, but, you know, I watched via Instagram the world did, you know, on the news and all that shit. So, yeah, man, big up those guys out there really doing some shit that's on their own, you know, and the way they want to do it, you know, without any corporate influence or anybody backing them, without any real backers, backed by the streets, basically. Right. Love that shit. That shit, it's not hip-hop, but that's hip-hop, you know?
That's for real. Yeah. That's real shit. Man. It's punk as fuck.
And then you're a rapper as well, right?
I dabbled back in the days, you know? You might hear me on
a couple tracks here and there.
Oh, shit. You know, big up the Urban Legend, Mr. Criminal, dropping real soon, you know? You catch me on a track on that one. Really, for me at this point, I get a lot more satisfaction, it's a lot more fun doing the management piece, you know? Like I said earlier, I alluded to earlier, you know, I've literally been across this country with the homie, China twice, Japan twice, Brazil, Chile, everywhere, man. And opportunities, before I started doing this, I'd never left North America. I've been to Mexico, I spent extensive time down in Mexico, but other than that, as far as going international like that, I'd never done it. You know, the guy's been doing it since back in the high power days. But for me to really go and see the influence and the love, man, the love that we get out there is just bananas. Big up all the homies out of Brazil, DRR Posse, you know, a big crew out there that's part of Crime Family Entertainment. The homie Grande, he just dropped his album dropped it a few months back on Crime Family, the first international language rap CD dropped on Crime Family. You know, we was out there in the favelas where you can't go in. Like, if you went over, you can't just go in there.
Right.
You know, we got in there. Yeah. They brought out the low riders. They brought out the music. We shot a video there. It was a party. Me, Criminal, Diablo was out there with us. Big up, Diablo.
Hell yeah.
Same thing. China, Japan did it all over again. Same thing. Shot a video every country we went to. We were on the Great Wall. We're literally on the Great Wall of China shooting a video.
Dope.
In like 7-degree weather.
That's not dope.
With some, like, just the random, like, regular Asian lady running up to this guy saying, "Criminal, criminal." Like, you would look at this lady, and she was just like your stereotypical looking. I mean, she wasn't like, dripped out, she like some. There was, she wasn't like one of those dripped out Asians, or she wasn't. Yeah, hip-hop. She wasn't all supremed out, you know, none of that. Yeah, she was just like a regular lady, and she was like, it was crazy, man. Winds were whipping up there. He put his jacket down to shoot a shot. Jacket went flying. Jeez. Yeah, it was, and I'm talking on literally on the Great Wall of China, bro. That's like dope. On it. That's, yeah, man. Just experiences crazy like that. Going and seeing the Forbidden City, just being treated like kings, really.
Yeah.
You know, building relationships and having that touch and that reach internationally, it's been a beautiful thing, man. And this Crime Family wave, if you ain't on it now, you better get on pretty quick, because it's what's popping.
Hell yeah. That's dope. And when you had your show, Mr. Criminal, in Japan, were there actually, like, I don't know what you call them, like, were there Asian cats straight up dressed like gangsters from LA?
Man, shout out to my homies out there in Japan. He there, fucking Jolo homie K. Yeah, man, they're more dripped out, more on point than us, more creased out than us, right. more gangster out than us. Nah, real shit. They embrace the culture. Uh-huh. and they never let it go. That's the best way I could say it. Like, people want to say, like, oh, they're stuck in the nah. They embrace the culture, and they won't let it go because they love it that much. And, you know, the people in Japan, they're very, they honor what they do. They'll, you know, they're very honorable. Everything's honor. So I think when they pick up something and they like it, they honor that shit. You know what I'm saying? And you can see it, and it's appreciated from us, too, because, I mean, shit, some of them dudes are representing the culture more than motherfuckers out there claiming the West.
Right. They kill shit.
And that honor and that love.
Low riders out there.
That honor and that love that they show, it like extends to whoever's with you. Yeah. So we went out there, right? Did a big show. Again, big up Mr. Homie K, Homie Brand Clothing, all that. And he, there was a show. It was a, there was a few of us, some other rappers, MC Poncho, the homies from Hellified. We all went out there to Japan. And they showed us love, you know? Love, love, love. Didn't spend a penny. Whatever we wanted, we had, basically. Right. So at the time, my wife's like, hey, you've been traveling everywhere. We want to travel, too. So before I left to Japan, I had to book my family tickets to go for Thanksgiving, you know, just to get that pass, really. Then I went out there, and I just told them, hey, you know, we're headed out there thinking, you know, we'll get together, have some coffee or something. Bro, they picked me up from the airport, took me to my Airbnb, picked me up from my Airbnb, paid for my hotel for the last 2 days, paid for every meal, took me to a car show, got me in places a regular person couldn't get in. So, like, once you're in with those people, it's so much about honor and respect. You're in.
That's dope.
No fucking around.
You're in.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to cut the homie off, but he's not highlighting something very important. There are also people of very high importance and a lot of power out there. So they don't flex it and don't muscle it, but they definitely show us that the luxuries of that, I should say. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. I just didn't want to get into as many particulars. But yeah, big up all those guys, Gimbo, K, Jin, Miyuki, the homie he did down in L.A., you know, all of
our whole Japanese West Coast Yakuza family. Let's
that's right. All right. There we go. Let's stop beating around the bush now.
It's out there. You know what I'm saying? They know. That's they right. represent that. Nah, definitely.
Absolutely. They hold it down. Shit.
Hell yeah. Another thing that is like took me by shock when I was checking all your shit out is, you got like 24 albums, bro. That's a fucking
shit. I think I got more than that.
Don't shortchange them. Yeah. You got more than that.
How many you got?
Shit, I don't know. I lost count a long time ago. I never even tried to count. But there was a moment where I was signed to my old label, and it was contractually 3 albums a year, and I carried my labels back fucking 5 years in a row. There was nobody being released with me from 2010 to, I think, 2015. Yeah, on the whole label, it was only my shit coming out three albums a year.
Hell yeah.
Not even the CEO, not even the other artists that was left.
And the one thing about your guys' movement, it's all independent.
Yes, sir.
So you guys are making real cash, like the Texas cats, you know what I mean?
Yes, sir. It's very independent, very organic, something that I'll never take advantage of. I always try to give the most value to my people that support me. You know? Try to give them double discs, try to give them dope shit. Even before we were printing before, and then my homeboy stepped up our printing right here, the homie Villain, with his connections and got us some even doper printing. And yeah, we just try to give the best for the people that work hard for their money, you know?
Hell yeah. Sounds like you guys got a hell of a network, man, you know?
Yeah, it's beautiful. We're right here chilling with two good people right here, smoking on some good right here. So yeah, that's props to the homie Villain, you know, setting that
up. That's right. That's right. We go back, you know, me and Joe Thunder go back when I spent some time out here in the Mile High. Yeah, everybody that knows me knows I mess with Denver Strong, you know. Yeah. Bronco gang, yeah, don't bang, you know.
That's the first thing you said here, and I was like, whoa, bro, they're
kind of, They know what it is. That's
a true cat right there.
Yeah, big up Shu and Crims and all the Denver TKOs out here that always showed love. Free Coes, you know what it is.
Hell yeah. Well, shit, man. What kind of stuff you got coming up?
Yeah, what's up with the crime family? What's coming next?
Man, this year we were focused on reinvesting. So, you know, we always put out a lot of content. We're always working. This year we created a 3,400 square foot studio / compound. Been starting different businesses. I just started a car business, classic car business company. Branding, I got my producer, I Am Critical, who's killing it. We just started a beat company as well. We got a lot of shit going on.
You got your
just
hands investing. In all kinds of shit. Yeah. I hope y'all pay attention to this.
Crime Family Kennels.
Crime Family Kennels, knee deep in doing kennels. My homeboy got some dogs on the ground right now. We got some dogs doing a lot of breedings. Gonna fly home to do a couple stud services. So, yeah, just working, man. Reinvesting, studying this fucking NFT and cryptocurrency market, trying to stay ahead of the curve.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Yeah, hell yeah.
And then next year, all music. All back to just fully just fucking dropping shit like cannons on the motherfuckers. Back to the tour. That's one thing. Like, this is the first, one of the first shows I've been on since, you know, the coronavirus thing had everything locked down so long. How the homeboy was bringing up all these world tours. That's what we were doing before all this shit. Right before we stopped.
Back to back,
I mean, we were,
back.
I had contracts and deposits from Russia, Auburn, Australia, New Zealand. Like, we were about to go. You know?
We were about to, like, literally about to go to Russia. Like, they, like, hey, I'm trying to go. He's like, nah, bro, this shit's crazy. I'm like, nah, this shit ain't crazy. It's cool. Like, I was so stoked. I wanted to go to Moscow. You know what I'm saying? And then, like, 2 days later, it got bad.
If we would have went, we would have got stuck.
Yeah, we would have been fucking assed out. I was so, I wanted to go so bad.
You never made it home.
Yep. So yeah, we'll get back to doing our world tour next year. I mean, I don't think there's thank God, you know, blessed, there's not a lot of West Coast artists at the caliber of where we're at that get to tour the world and have fans touch us all over the world. So we're gonna get back to enjoying that and enjoying some of the fruits of our hard labor, man.
Yeah. That's real dope, man. That's real dope. Like I said, y'all got a million things going on.
Yeah.
I was always told you gotta have 12 hustles. Sound like you got 50.
Got it, homie. Got it. It's in my blood, man. Straight up.
Stop.
Hell yeah. What's your social media so they can check you out if they don't know?
Yeah, Mr. Criminal on Instagram, Mr. Criminal 1 on Twitter, The Crime Family on Facebook. We got my homeboy right here, Black Mexico. You can follow him, Crime Family Entertainment. Man, we just right here, man, working. Same shit, you know? Google search Mr. Criminal. Like the homie says, Google me, bitch.
Google me, bitch.
All right.
You'll find it for sure.
Yeah. We're in the studio. Some dude named Chris Knox that works with Dr. Dre and all them. He's on one of my albums. He's producing. I'll never forget. I was dead in the studio. I was dead ass serious, too. If you're hearing this, Chris, you know you were wrong for that shit. Somebody was in the studio, and he just looked at him dead serious and goes, Google me, dog. I was like, damn, this fool's dead serious.
Seriously, Google me,
I was like,
though.
Damn, Chris Knox.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Damn. There you go. That's all.
Don't get Googled out here. Some people might not want the results.
Keep it humble, homie.
Yeah.
Do you have any moments throughout your career that just kind of really stand out? Like maybe somebody you met or something you accomplished?
Man, everything, man. To be honest with you, like I always say, I always take it back to the beginning and why I emphasize my youth so much and, you know, making it out of where we made it is because we were doing shit that we shouldn't be here probably still to this day. You know what I'm saying? Whether the consequences were from the Lord because we lost our life or getting caught up. And at the end of the day, I've always been just thankful and I've always tried to take every single moment and appreciate it, you know what I'm saying? Because this shit is definitely a blessing. It's definitely, I know for a fact that some people will never get to do what we get to do, and it's a dream for a lot of people. So I think the whole experience, the whole, to answer your question, just the whole fucking thing. I feel like I'm dreaming every day.
Do you have a show that you were like, when you did that show, you were like, oh, shit.
You know, I would say it's not the show. Definitely there's some shows, 100%. I remember when I did my first Summer Jam in Salt Lake City, and we were up there headlining. I went all by myself, actually. No hype man, no nothing, just a cameraman. Yeah. And we were like on the lineup with 3-6 Mafia, Bubba Sparks back then, Too Short. I mean, the most popping of the popping. We were like, our shit was like number one on that station. So I remember looking into that, probably like about a good 12,000, 15,000 people. People going crazy, that shit felt great, you know?
But hell yeah.
Hearing yourself on the radio growing up, like, now don't mean shit. Nobody really listen to radio like they used to. It's all about this shit now. Right. You know, everybody took over with podcasts and stuff. But hearing myself on Power 106 in heavy rotation, I think that was probably the most proud shit that I ever had in my life.
Hell yeah.
Remember the first time you got high?
Yeah, I do. Because I was jealous of my homeboys. We're always smoking with my big homies and they're always getting high and laughing and falling out over the floor and being goofy and all smoking and it never hit me like that. And I get fucking pissed. Like, how come I don't feel like them, you know?
Yeah.
So I keep trying the whole summer and I was inhaling it right or some shit. And just one night, I remember we were playing Super Nintendo on the homie's pad. Or no, it was regular Nintendo. And fucking, I was like 11 years old and something. I hit that shit somehow. And I just remember just fucking laughing to the point where the homie's mom kicked me out of the house. Like, we got to go to work the next day.
Oh, shit.
Goofy ass, high ass little friend out of this house.
That's hilarious.
I'll never forget that.
That's
real
funny.
Shit.
That's wild.
Frankie Frias, rest in peace, his mom. I remember
Damn.
That.
Damn.
Hell yeah.
You were 11, you said?
I was 11.
Wow. You remember the first time you got high?
I do. Kind of same story, although I wasn't quite that young. I was, in eighth grade or the end of seventh grade. And my homie Evil from my neighborhood, he always had weed. And back in the day, you know, he had like a little nickels of weed, and you would put it in a paper. Right. He'd have it at the bottom of his shoe, all sweaty, you know.
Right.
Right. And he brought some, and he had been smoking, or at least we thought he had been smoking like 4 years at that point. Like he was in third grade smoking. And, yeah, we were at there was an old graffiti yard called the Sanborn Yard right there in Hollywood where Santa Monica and Sunset splits. And that's where we would catch the bus to go to our high school. Big up John Marshall High School Barristers. And, yeah, we smoked some shoe weed, and I was fucking same thing, just laughing, like uncontrollably. And then, obviously, after that, just the uncontrollable fucking munchies.
Yeah.
But I had smoked a couple of times before and hadn't got high.
That's funny.
You know? Yeah. But, yeah, after that, it was a wrap.
You ever get busted smoking weed by anybody who was, like, who didn't want
to? I got busted in Mexico smoking weed.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I was living in a little town, Cocula, Jalisco.
They hate over there, too.
And this was, like, in the 90s, too. So me, my homie Oscar Lopez, because, like, the go-to in L.A., like, when your kid was fucking up, the parents would send them back to Mexico with their for, like, a summer, for
right,
a year.
Right.
So I was fucking up so bad that my peoples told my mom, hey, you just send his ass to Mexico, too. He could go to our town and post up right there.
Oh,
he's
shit.
Got you in the streets looking for you all the time.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so anyway, we get some weed, some red hair, you know. Back right. in the day, it was the red hair. But it was some decent weed, especially for this little-ass town in Mexico. Yeah. There wasn't really weed. So when somebody got an ounce, like everyone knew, and you went and got your ration, you know. Yeah. You were able to buy yeah, a little 20 pesos worth, 30 pesos worth. And we get out of the discoteca. And we're going out into these fields to smoke. And there's a truck behind us. And they're like, hey, güey, es la preventiva. You know, the preventiva was the local police force. And in my American-ass mind, I seen that truck only had one headlight. So I'm like, a fucking official police car is not going to only have one headlight. Right, so I'm like, nah. So I'm holding the weed. I don't want to throw this shit because we don't know when we might ever get some weed again,
right?
Especially of that caliber, you know. And these are the times you're smoking motherfucking male plants, just the leaves, to try to get high in Mexico, you know. But this was actually some buds. They had some red hair, whatever. So I'm holding it, and then I fucking, they're like, throw that shit, my homie Oscar Lopez, and I throw it. Boom, we go for probably another quarter mile, and boom, they. Traditional Mexican style, you know, they hop out with the rifles. There's like four of them in the back.
Yeah.
Fucking, they start fucking with me. They go through my wallet and they find rolling papers. And they're like, oh, Americanito. They're like, you're probably the one that comes over here and does the deals to send the drugs to the United States.
Oh, shit.
And I give them some stupid ass story about how I used to be a drug addict and I just forgot these papers in my wallet and da da da. And they're looking hard for this little, it's probably a gram and a half.
Right.
You know, maybe 2 grams of some compressor. And they're looking for it, bro, out like of this field. And probably literally 20 minutes pass. The fool says all happy, I got it. And then boom, right then they stop making jokes and they just fucking put the guns on us. They have my homie Oscar drive his dad's fucking Corvette back. No, Camaro back with the fucking, with the rifle in his stomach. And anyway, we sit in the local jail. It's the weekend. The judge and anybody ain't coming until Monday.
Right.
You know? And there's no food program. They don't bring you any food there.
Yeah, fuck you.
Everything's out, and they're just threatening us. Like, you're going to the fucking state prison in Ameca. You're going to Ameca. We're going to send you there. You're fucked, you know? So, and my buddy's like, well, my grandpa's a transit cop in this other town, you know, trying to use that shit to his advantage.
Right.
And Tuesday, they finally put us out. We go have a meeting with the mayor, the presidente de Puebla, right? And basically, we cut a deal that if I leave the town, they'll fucking throw all the charges out.
So you got kicked out of Mexico.
But this fool had to, no, I just got kicked out of that town.
Oh, okay.
But I didn't leave. So now, every time we're posted and the cops come, they have to make like a circle around me, dogs, so that the cops don't see me and know I'm there. Yeah, it went on for like 2 months. And then I bolted out back to Zacatecas. But yeah, in LA, I never got caught with weed.
What about the opposite of that story when we were smoking in Brazil?
We were doing too much in Brazil.
They don't give a fuck though.
Hitting with you and shit.
They were well. There's a park over there, bro, called Cracolandia. And literally, you could do whatever you want in that park. Sell crack, smoke crack. The cops are literally posted outside. The crack task force is parked right outside of the park. Bro, there were people getting stripped and robbed and beat up in front of us. And the cop, one cop was in the car sleeping and the other one was sitting on the fucking on Facebook.
No fucking
way. Was getting stripped.
Right in front of him, like 20 feet away.
Oh, my God.
Damn.
And he's we're looking at him like, what the hell? And 10 feet away, this guy's hitting the weed.
They're telling us right there in the hotel, no matter what you do, our promoters, do not get caught smoking and do not be outside at night.
And do not be walking with your phones.
And we're like walking, taking pictures, 4 a.m. I'm smoking Leños.
5 in the morning going
20 feet from the cops.
Going to Habibi's. That was the late night spot out there, Habibi's and shit. Yeah, that was the only place open. We were doing all the things we shouldn't have done. But you know what?
Everything they told us not to do, we were doing.
Everything.
That's how we wanted to experience the place.
And we were we were good. And we were good. We didn't have a single hiccup.
Yeah, nothing.
Met some good people. Shot a sick-ass video. Go check out on YouTube the video Grimy. out there in Brazil.
But I see.
Yeah.
That's dope.
Hell yeah.
That must have been wild. Brazil's fucking crazy.
It's not like you see in the TV though, man.
No.
They don't show where we was at. They don't show that.
Yeah.
It was perfect for the video. It was grimy.
Oh,
it was.
I'm talking about the favelas and shit. You're saying you're in the.
But even in the regular parts of the city, it wasn't very much nicer.
Really?
Well, the favela just concentrated, and that's where people live. So,
that's the most gangster city I've ever been to in my life.
Oh.
Ever, dog.
For real?
By far, homie. That shit makes L.A. feel like Disneyland.
Like, you feel like there's a bunch of 11-year-old assassins with no shoes on.
Riding
on the back of bicycles with no shoes.
When the
ready
motorcycles
to
pull up
and
get a little nervous and shit.
But we were walking all through Santa Efigenia, down in downtown Sao Paulo.
Yeah, we're doing the most.
Never saw.
Did you guys have straps down there or no?
Tell him, Billy.
Nah, he had a super plastic Teflon knife, like a Rambo knife, but this motherfucker was made of plastic.
Right.
So it could get through the metal detectors.
Yeah, so it could get through the metal detectors. He had it everywhere. And then he had the sleeves so that the thieves couldn't steal his credit card information.
Hell yeah.
Strapped up to his body. He had like a sleeve and the fucking, they couldn't read his shit.
The
he had the plastic knife. Hey, we were ready.
Tell them the truth though. How much fucking paper was in that shit? If they would have fucking caught that shit, they would have stripped my ass. They would have been able to pay that shit for a year.
They would have taken care of generations of their family. They would have hit the generational wealth lick. But they were like, if anything, smoke weed in your hotel room. And we're like, what? That's like complete opposite logic.
Right. But not over there.
But nah, he was standing in the front of the thing with some of the craziest weed I've seen in a while.
Really? Out there, they had some wild weed?
It was wild. It wasn't good, but it was wild.
And like some wild, like fucking some dirt? Some dirt weed or ditch weed.
I've never impressed with anybody's weed. Even when I went to Amsterdam, I was all that hype. Way. That shit was whack as fuck. I was trying to smoke in Amsterdam. I was like, damn, this shit's like
all expensive
dirt.
For garbage.
Some bullshit.
Hell yeah.
And those crabs on the TV are making me hungry.
Where's the best weed?
Right.
Huh?
Where do you think the best weed is?
Right here in California.
right here
at Be Good right Dispensary.
Right here in Denver, in California too. If you see me, I got the packs, baby.
Wherever he's at, he got the good
weed.
At
Be Good and Kelly.
Just like wherever
I usually keep the bomb on me at all times.
That's what I'm saying. Wherever you see Elvis, wherever you see Joe Thunder, Mr. Criminal, they always got the good weed.
There's some fire
always.
There.
Yeah. Even if when we were going to China, I had it.
Yeah, that's wild. I had to.
China was wild. They don't like weed out there either.
And then they pulled out my fucking vape carts right in front of me. And I was like, fucking, they took me to a secondary search and was like looking at them and everything.
Yeah, like seven of them.
Are these
like, you open, there's nothing in the Louis bag but lighters and carts and shit. Like a whole fucking.
Not a little excessive.
Yeah, like a pinata of weed concentrates. Louis Vuitton pinata. God, that shit is. I'm telling you. I mean, we're walking on the tarmac. Like some of these third world countries and different countries, you know, it's not like we have it here. You walk out in DIA and you walk down a ramp and shit. Right, bro, you're walking on the fucking tarmac, getting on a bus, riding to some other place, and this was smoking on the airport on the motherfucking air on the airport. Not in the airport.
On the airport.
On the airport. Walk China, Brazil. Do I dare tell where? Oh, man. Is that too much? Am I doing too much right now?
That's cool. Hey.
All the way on the plane.
He is Mr. Criminal.
Hey, look. So,
on the plane?
On the plane. All the time. All the time.
Exclusive.
And coughing. not like the screen. No.
He ain't trying to hide it. He's letting it be known.
They're like trying to hold it.
And then I'll look at this before, and he'll be like, what the fuck are you doing, dog, with his eyes all big? And I'll be like, what, homie?
And then he'll be like saying that I'm the one that's burning it like, by bringing attention to it. Then he's like he's super being smooth about it, but he's yeah. not.
Hey, have I
got, never, now we have got, what?
They never have you what? Nothing. Have I ever got caught smoking on the plane?
No.
No, I have not.
You're fucking wild.
That's I remember hilarious. One time, I got to tell you a story about this though. I remember one time I was in Dallas in between. He wasn't with me. And I'll never forget this shit. I fucking went, and I was tired as fuck, and I had a long-ass layover. I put my hoodie over my head, and I took the biggest fucking hit, dog. And I came out, and I was like, I probably look so suspicious. I probably look like a fucking Arab with half my head wrapped. And I go like this, and I'm like... And dog, I saw some smoked lady look at me, and she grabbed her husband and goes, hey, I fucking ran, dog. I fucking ran. I was like, she's going to tell them this fool's going to blow up the airport or some shit. I can guarantee they were looking for me after that, 100%. No doubt in my mind. No doubt. No fucking running. Doubt. Oh, because she like grabbed right. her man and ran. Like he's going to blow it up, you know?
Oh, shit.
And I was like, fuck, I better run too. I'm not going to sit here like the cops run up on me.
Right, fuck that shit.
And then the last time I was going on my way to Cancun, I thought I was all smooth in the same one of the same terminals me and him were in last when we left the country. And I was all by myself right there in the corner. Big puffs is fucking going off. And you know, some of the cops in LAX, they have the fucking, like, the scooters where they roll up on you.
Right.
And I'm Segway. Fucking... like, puffing crazy in this little corner. And I turn around, and this fool's, like, right on me, like... And I'm like... oh, shit.
I'm all calm.
I'm like... Sorry, sir. And he just turns around and dips. No, I was like, fuck. I just called my blessings and was like, I'm chilling. Yeah.
You ever smoke weed in Japan?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. What's the weed out like out there?
Not as good as California.
No.
Just is it swag or is it like some,
I mean,
all right weed?
Everything.
Like some homegrown.
Is it
everything? I mean, no disrespect to everywhere else except for Seattle and Denver. And I would say, nah, you guys are the only places that have it on lock other than that because you guys came into the legal game first.
Right.
Everybody else's weed's whack.
Yeah,
like, I'm just being real. Yeah. Like, you guys' shit's like comparable. Like, most of their shit's like fucking just ass, you know? It don't even look like this. Like,
no, I know. I'd be.
It just looks like dirt, shit. You know?
No, no.
Definitely been some places where I'm like, yeah. Oh, fuck. Yeah. I went to Belize. I took some rosin with me and a chapstick.
Just, oh,
like,
shit.
Peeled out the it looks like chapstick, you know?
Smart.
And fucking. Put the whole shit, and I'm just giving away them. Allegedly, I did this shit. And I get to...
This is for a movie script.
Yeah, and I took one of those pens that you load up yourself.
Yeah.
And at first I was like, you know, hitting that, but I like smoking weed. So one of the local cats is like, I get some good weed. And then I was like, all right, let me see. And I guess it's legal in Belize, 10 grams. So he goes and gets me some. Like, it's definitely, it's swag, but it's not pressed, and it don't have a bunch of seeds.
Right.
But I put some rosin on it, and I smoked it with those guys. Bro, I fucked their whole world up. They
never had no shit like that.
One of them was like, I ain't never smoking with you. And he's like, nah, fuck you, get away from me. The other guys were like, let's smoke some more of that right. shit. Like, it was insane, though. It was like
the heroin weed.
The fire rosin, though. Yeah, they definitely, I fucked their whole world. One dude, he was even like comatose, like sitting in a corner.
Yeah, just another fucked up.
That shit's crazy.
Hell yeah. You got any final thoughts there, man?
Man, shit. If anything, I'm just on this investing right now. Like, I'm super needy. I found a new passion, man. Investing and doing all this shit. I've been working for years and reading books like Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill and like Rich Dad, Grow Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. I've read books like that for many years. I've always been reading like the 22 Immutable Laws of Branding. I like to educate myself on business, but I never knew how to apply it other than just working, you know?
Right.
A lot of the things that those things say is like, let your money work for itself. And I didn't understand that shit until recently. And it's a beautiful thing. I just encourage people to study investing and study how to build wealth for your family and for generations. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like a lot of these people, they say knowledge is power if you put it to something, to a goal that's attainable, you know?
Right.
And a lot of people have the knowledge, but they don't chase their goals. You know? Yeah. So I think it's important for people to educate themselves and then act on it.
That's it.
Hell yeah.
You have to grow. Knowledge is key.
Absolutely.
Knowledge is key.
Absolutely.
Any final thoughts, Villain? Any shout outs?
Nah, I'm posting, man. Shout out to everybody out there supporting Crime Family. You know what it is.
Hell yeah.
Crime Family holding it down.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Check us at the Roxy.
Yeah.
Yep, tonight. You know what I'm saying? We're going to be there.
Well, yeah.
Well, shit, we definitely appreciate y'all coming on by and blessing us with the podcast. It was a dope interview. We covered a lot of stuff that you talked about. We covered a lot of shit that I ain't ever really heard, too. So I appreciate that, brother.
Hell yeah. Always.
Thank you for stopping
by. Hey,
it's
a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for blessing the city, the spot for sure.
Hell yeah. Always. Always.
That be good.
Yeah, hell yeah.
That's right.
There you have it. You know what I mean? It's your boy, Joe Thunder. Smoking Joe Thunder podcast. Elvis Freshly, DJ Sin, Mr. Criminal, Villain. Another hot episode for you, man. This is going to be off the Richters for y'all. So catch us. We're on all platforms. We'll see you again. Later. Peace.